arm, then said to us, "It's a stressful thing, a wedding."
"Oh my God!"
she screeched, wrenching away from him. She pushed back her chair, getting to her feet.
"I'm sorry, I need..."
"Of course," William said smoothly. "Restroom is around the corner. I'll get you a water."
I wasn't sure that was going to help, especially after I heard how hard the bathroom door slammed a moment later.
Nevertheless, he disappeared down the hallway with a bottle in hand, leaving me, my mom, and Ambrose alone. I looked down at the floor. Tape was everywhere.
"You know, Ambrose," my mother said after a moment, "it would be a huge help to us if you didn't drive your sister insane before August." Despite B's breakdown and the tape explosion, there was only one thing I noticed as my mother said this. For the first time, she was talking in "we" when it came to this wedding. B was surely embarrassed, but thanks to said outburst, it looked like my mom was finally in.
"People never believe me when I tell them this," Ambrose replied, folding his arms on the table. "But I'm not trying to annoy her. She's just very sensitive."
"You really think that's the issue?" my mother asked.
He nodded, somber.
"Always has been."
"I heard your mother sent you here because she was so frustrated with dealing with you."
"True,"
he agreed.
"And I wrecked her car. But in my defense, she is also very sensitive. I think it's a genetic thing."
"Oh, for God's sake," I thought, fighting the urge to roll my eyes. Of course it was everyone else's fault. Next, he'd blame the tape dispenser. My mother, however, smiled at him, clearly amused.
"Did I hear B say you need a job?"
"That's what I'm told,"
he replied.
"You're told?"
"It's actually more of an ultimatum," he admitted. "Apparently, I am both annoying and expensive."
Instead of replying, my mom just studied him, one hand twisting the diamond necklace she wore every day. I didn't like the look on her face even before she said,
"How about this? You work for me this summer, and I'll take your wages off my fee, which your mother is paying."
"Really? Mom?" I said, stunned. Ambrose grinned at me.
"Did you hear that? We'll be co-workers."
"But you have to actually work," she told him, firm now.
"I don't do annoying or expensive, and you show up on time. Is that clear?"
"Absolutely," he replied.
"When do I start?"
"Now." My mom pushed out her chair, then pointed under the table. "Pick up all this tape, then come find me for a coffee order. I need caffeine."
"On it,"
Ambrose said, giving her a mock salute as she started into her office. I followed her, glancing behind us just before shutting the door to see him crouched down on the carpet, picking up the tape one piece at a time. He saw me looking at him and gave me a cheerful thumbs up. Jesus.
"Are you crazy?" I said to her, closing the door. "Why in the world would you hire him?"
"It's our job to keep the brides calm and focused," she replied, pulling her wallet out of her purse. "This wedding is a mess so far, and yet the only time I've seen B upset has been because of Ambrose. This way, he's out of her hair and helping us at the same time."
"No way," I said, shaking my head. "You've never hired anyone on the spot like that. You background check the rare person you do take on. There's no way you'd risk your name and your event just to keep someone busy."
"I can't do a good deed?" she asked, amused.
"You don't do good deeds," I said flatly.
"Hey,"
she protested. I just looked at her. Finally, she sighed and said, "Okay, fine. I may have gotten a phone call earlier from Eve about how B was at her wit's end with her brother and asking if, for an additional fee, we could divert him somehow."
"She's paying you to babysit him?"
"Not babysit," he
He's working, or no deal. I told her that.
She slipped a 20 out of her wallet, handing it to me. And I'm not going to trust him with anything crucial, God knows. Errands, physical labor, last-minute details, and coffee runs. I thought for a second.
But that's my job.
Exactly, she smiled. And you are about to graduate and have your last summer before college. I'd like to see you actually try to enjoy it.
Do not do this for me, I said in a warning voice. I've already dealt with him enough to know I'd rather work alone than with that kind of help.
You're welcome, she said as if I hadn't spoken at all. Then, before I could protest further, she leaned forward, pressing her lips to my forehead. Give him this and the standard coffee order and point him toward Jump Java. Then you're officially off duty, okay? I wanted to keep at this, stop what would surely be a runaway train before it even had a chance to gain speed. But over her shoulder, the clock said 4:15, and I had a date to meet Jilly in line, Steve Baroff between us or not, in 2 hours. Plus, based on all I'd already seen of Ambrose Little, he wouldn't need me to sabotage him. He'd do it himself. Probably before I even flipped my tassel. Okay, I said, taking the bill from her. It's your funeral. What a charming way to put it, she replied, spoken just like a high school graduate. I rolled my eyes, reaching down to open the door. When I pushed it open, it banged hard against something on the other side, which I saw as I peeked around it was Ambrose, who was still on the floor and most likely close enough to have heard everything. Whoops.
I think I got it all, he said now, not sounding offended at least. Man, that is some sticky tape.
That's why we keep it in the dispenser, I told him as he got to his feet, picking pieces off his hands and dropping them in a nearby trash can. My mom wants coffee. I'm supposed to give you her order and point you there on my way out.
Great, he replied,
so easygoing, like a person who'd never had a reason not to be. Of course, he hadn't heard what I'd said. Even if he had, I was sure he'd figure I was talking about someone else, or that I was just sensitive.
Lead the way.
It may seem like just coffee, I said as we stood in an unexpectedly long line at Jump Java, but nothing is just anything when it comes to my mother. That's the first thing you need to know. He nodded.
She's a tough nut, is what you're saying.
I looked at him. Never call her that, like, ever.
Noted.
He shook his head, that one curl bouncing off to the side.
You know, I'm getting the sense you don't have a lot of confidence in my ability to do this job.
You're correct, I replied as the line finally moved a bit. He had the nerve to look offended.
Why? You don't even know me.
Maybe, but let's recap my experience with you so far. You delayed your mother's wedding,
which, in retrospect, might have been a good thing. Imagine if I'd been talking to Demi even longer. She might have come to her senses and saved herself a lot of anguish.
And just today, I went on, you broke company property and made a client cry.
I made my sister cry, he corrected me. At the time, I was not yet an employee. Let's be clear here.
The line inched forward slightly. Do you always deflect anything that might make you accountable for a problem?
For some reason, blame is often directed toward me. I have to be vigilant.
For some reason?
Weren't you going to give me the coffee order?
My jaw clenched hard, and I told myself to relax. When I couldn't, I distracted myself by looking over the woman William and I had christened Phone Lady. Every weekday, no matter what time I came in for coffee, she was at that same single table, her laptop open, phone to her ear. There she would talk, loudly, as if compelled to make everyone hear her end of whatever conversation she was having. Sometimes it was about her work, She did some kind of medical record transcribing. More often, though, the talk was personal. Earlier in the week, for example, I'd learned both that one of her friends had recently gotten a breast cancer diagnosis and that she herself was allergic to wheat germ. And that had been a short line. Sure enough, during a pause of the espresso machine, I could now make out her high, slightly twangy voice saying something about airline fares. I said to Ambrose, "William will always want a tall chai latte with skim milk. He's the constant. It's my mom that's the wild card. Most days she's going to want an espresso with whole milk. If she's really stressed, she'll ask for a double. But if she snaps at you, just get a single. She won't know the difference, and it's better for everyone." Ambrose didn't respond, and I realized he was studying the pastries. "Great." "Hello," I said. "Are you even..."
"Tall chai latte, skim. Mom asked for a single espresso, so don't have to make a judgment call. Plus, two chocolate croissants, warmed up, so they're nice and melty."
I blinked, surprised he'd at least gotten some of it right. "I didn't say anything about croissants.
Those are for us," he said.
"I don't want a croissant."
"You seem a little crabby. It might help," he advised. "Don't worry, it's on me. Although, I might have to borrow a couple of bucks until payday."
Later, I'd realized that this response pretty much summed up everything that made me nuts about Ambrose in one simple sentence. At the time, though, I just stood there, unable to respond. Then my phone beeped. Jilly. "Are you getting excited? Word is, party at the A-frame will be amazing. Making memories!"
"Party at the A-frame, huh?"
Ambrose asked, reading over my shoulder.
"Where's that?"
I jerked my phone to the side. "Seriously? Do you have any manners at all?"
"You're the one who pulled out a phone during our conversation,"
he noted. When I glared at him, he said,
"You know, you really might want to rethink that croissant." "Next!"
called the bearded guy behind the counter, a little older than me, whose preference for plaid shirts had made William christen him the Lumberjack.
"Hey, how's the wedding business?"
"Crazy as ever," I said. I gestured at Ambrose. "He's got the order, but you probably know it better than even I do."
"Probably,"
Lumberjack said.
"But tell me anyway."
"I'm out of here," I told Ambrose. "Don't forget extra napkins."
"Okie doke,"
he said, as I turned away toward the door.
"Have fun at graduation!"
This last comment was said in such a cheerful and easygoing tone, the absolute opposite of how I was feeling, that I felt my jaw clench again. How on earth could someone be so immune to basic social cues, so entirely oblivious to how annoying he was? I was still wondering this as I pulled the door open, phone lady's voice again suddenly audible over other conversations, music, and the beeping register.
"Just one of those days," she was saying. "And did you hear about the shooting in California? 5 kids, they are saying. 5! That's the most since..."
I shut the door so hard behind me it rattled the glass, not that anyone noticed. Everyone's always in their own world when it's still an option. Chapter 5.
"See?" Jilly yelled. "Making memories! You and me, just like the yearbook!"
At least, that was what I thought she said. It was hard to be sure, as we were in the center of a tightly packed crowd of people dancing and also screaming at each other over the thumping, bass-driven music. All this in the living room of an A-frame house that had apparently been the place to party for everyone at our school for the last year. Jilly had been saying hello to people all night. So far, I hadn't recognized a soul. But I was here, in the early minutes of my first full day as a high school graduate, a warm beer in one hand. Our commencement, held in an amphitheater at the U, had been long and dull, a fact made even more difficult by the hot, humid night. Each time I looked up from my place in the row of chairs, Steve Baroff beside me, red-eyed, giggling occasionally, all I could see were people fanning themselves with programs, the movement back and forth almost hypnotic. I felt awake only during the few minutes I was on my feet, walking to the stage and then across it to get my diploma. The crowd had been told repeatedly not to cheer for individual graduates, a directive totally ignored, so I still heard William's voice shouting, "Bravo!" somewhere in the distance. It wasn't just the heat hanging over us. There was also that day's school shooting, the details of which I'd done my best to avoid. This was not easy, as my classmates were discussing it as we lined up, and then the principal made mention of it not once but three times during his prepared remarks. I understood the reasons for this. It was the world we were living in, our reality, and as another public high school, we couldn't pretend otherwise. There had been a time, not that many months ago, when I, too, would have been glued to the news sites on my phone or the TV, sharing with anyone each new detail of breaking news. But then another had happened, and one more. Now knowing was just too much. I felt a bump at my back and turned as much as I could, considering the tight space, to see the boy Jilly had introduced me to earlier. Jeff? Jay? Was back beside me, a fresh beer for each of us in his hands. His friend was behind Jilly, his arms around her waist as she leaned back into him, smiling as he whispered something in her ear. This was as out there as I'd ever been, and I was trying to be a good sport about it. So when Jeff, I was pretty sure it was Jeff, held one of the cups out to me, I took it. "It's punch!" he yelled in my ear. "Keg was out!" I looked down at the drink, a bright blue concoction with specks of something floating in it. "Great!" I yelled back. No way in hell was I drinking that. "Thanks!" He nodded, slipping his now free hand around my waist as he started bopping up and down to the beat. Tall and thin, with very large ears and visible tattoos under his shirt collar, he went to another school in the area, wore a chain wallet, and had already squashed my foot more times than I could count with the heavy boots he was wearing. But he seemed nice enough, and I knew Jilly was thrilled to see me with any guy other than William. Sure enough, as I thought this, she untangled herself long enough to lean forward toward me again. "Isn't this the best?" she hollered, spilling some of her beer on me. "Bring on college! I am so ready!" I nodded, smiling at her while at the same time quite aware of Jeff's arm tightening around me to pull me back in his direction. I felt myself tense by reflex and tried to put a bit more space between us. No luck. He was latched on and now leaning into my other ear.
"I've never seen you out here before," he said. "What's your story?"
How do you even answer such a question? Stories, as a rule, had to be told. Could you really do that while pushed together on a hot dance floor where you couldn't even hear yourself think? Maybe I was overthinking this, I thought. I'd just give him the quickest answer I could. I turned toward him, formulating my response, but when I opened my mouth to begin, suddenly he was kissing me. In no way did I see it coming. There was not a lean-in, the slow shrinkage of space between us, just lips, big ones, suddenly engulfing mine. He tasted like beer, and all I could feel was his tongue. Immediately, I wrenched my head away from his, although his hand was still tight on my hip, holding me in place.
"Don't!"
I said in the loudest voice I'd used all night.
"What?"
He smiled at me, sleepily, then ran his other hand down my back.
"We're just dancing, baby."
I turned, trying to catch Jilly's eye, but a group of girls in shiny plastic class of 16 tiaras, boas around their necks, had wound between us. The music seemed louder suddenly, and my face was hot as I tried again to pull loose from Jeff's grip. I was starting to panic, feeling wholly trapped as the last girl bumped past me, her feathers tickling my face. It was that same feeling I got sometimes of things being too much, too full, more than I could take. I had a flash of people running from a building, arms over their heads, and my stomach lurched. "Breathe," I told myself, closing my eyes for a second. "You're here. You're okay." But the images kept coming. Wide shots, narrow ones, helicopter view. And then, suddenly, something totally different. A boy on the beach in a white shirt, hand reaching out, an instant of comfort, safety, home. Even though it hadn't happened in months, I could feel what was about to happen, the panic rising like a liquid filling me up. I pulled away from Jeff again, and as he yanked me back, my vision started to blur. I closed my eyes, saying that familiar prayer. "Ethan," I thought. "Ethan." Then I felt someone standing right in front of me. I blinked and found I was face to face with Ambrose Little. "Conga!" he yelled past me at Jeff, who just looked at him, confused. Then he reached for my hand, and without thinking, I grabbed on tight and let him pull me away.
"Did you see the ears on that guy? You think the world sounds really loud to him, like, all the time?"
I was trying to catch my breath, which was made harder by the worry that I might not be able to do it. For once, I was glad for Ambrose's nattering, if not clinging to his stupid words with every inhale.
"I mean, I'm all about distinctive features,"
he continued as I glanced over to see his own trademark curl, damp with sweat, tumble over into his eyes.
"And it's not like he can help it. Cards you're dealt and all that. But I bet he got called Jughead a lot as a kid. And if he didn't, someone was falling down on the job. Hey, are you going to drink that?"
I blinked, then looked down at the cup in my hand, which I'd forgotten I was holding. "It's blue," I managed to say.
"Pie in the sky, i.e. blueberry yum punch and vodka. Cheap, strong, and yes, blue. What, you don't like it?"
I handed him the cup, still focusing on inhaling as he took a big swig, winced, and then set it down between us. We were outside the A-frame on the front deck, where we'd ended up after our conga exit from Jeff and the dance floor. Nearby, a keg stood, surrounded by crumpled cups. In a dim corner, a couple was making out. It wasn't cold outside at all, but I had chills. Still.
"Ambrose!"
One of the boa girls, tall, with red hair and freckles, stumbled through the door and over to us.
"There you are! I lost you!"
"And now I'm found," he replied, smiling. "You're amazing, Grace."
She beamed, her face seeming to almost light up in the dark. I had a flash of that girl in the country club parking lot, looking at him in the same way. Attention from a cute boy, you could power the world with it.
"Dance with me,"
she said now, extending a hand to him. The lone outside light was behind her, catching the feathers of her boa as they trembled in the mild breeze. Too much, all at once, again. I looked away.
"You promised, remember?"
"I am a man of my word," Ambrose replied, reaching out to her.
Instead of taking her hand, though, he opened his palm flat, prompting her to do the same.
"But Luna and I here are talking business. I'll come find you."
Grace dropped her hand, her mouth forming a pout.
"I don't like waiting."
5 minutes,
he told her. He spread his fingers, and I watched the mechanics of her moving her hand into his, suddenly so intimate, so quickly. Then he let go.
Meet me at the punch bowl. I'll be the one about to sweep you off your feet.
There was that look again, like a surge of electricity moving over her face.
I'm counting on it, she said, and then turned, walking away slowly the way someone does when they want to be watched, and know they will be.
Once she was back inside, Ambrose picked up my cup again, finishing off the contents. As he crumpled it in his hand, I said, Are you serious with all this?
What this?
I nodded at the door, which Grace had left slightly open behind her. The way you talk to her, is it a joke or not?
I never joke when it comes to pretty girls, he replied. Of course he didn't. Don't feel bad about not understanding me, though, he said. I'm kind of an enigma. Mysterious. Hard to know.
People that are hard to know don't often announce the fact they are hard to know, I pointed out.
That's part of the enigma thing. Always staying unexpected. So, what happened to you back there?
I blinked, surprised by this sudden left turn in conversation. It was hot, I said. I got lightheaded.
So old Jughead groping you wasn't an issue?
I reached up, tucking a piece of hair behind my ear. It was a grope, wasn't it?
More like a grip.
He stretched his legs out in front of him, leaning back on his palms.
If you have to clutch a girl, you're doing something wrong. Definitely not a mysterious enigma.
My friend set me up with him. I said,
Might be time for a new friend.
I shook my head. No, she means well. I'm not that social lately. She's trying to change that.
Not social? What's that like?
As if on cue, the door slid open again. At first, I thought it was Grace, as the figure that emerged also had a boa and tiara. As she got closer, however, I realized it was one of her friends, a shorter girl, curvier, with dark hair.
Ambrose, are you hiding from me?
I thought you knew you were it, he told her with a smile.
She struck a pose, one hand on her hip.
You know that's true. I am all it and a bag of chips. Now come on back inside. You promised to take a shot with me.
You had me at chips. Just give me 5 minutes.
Again, a pout. Was I the only girl who didn't have this move already down?
I don't wait for anyone.
I'm not just anyone. I'm Ambrose.
He winked at her.
5 minutes. I'll be the one ready for some chips.
She shifted her weight to the other leg. Hope you're hungry. I was struggling not to make a disgusted face when I realized that I wasn't having trouble breathing anymore. For all the ridiculousness of these exchanges, the distraction had been helpful.
See you inside,
Ambrose said now, and after a beat, the girl turned and walked away, fluffing her hair as she went. Wow, I said as the door shut behind her.
Agreed. I'm all for innuendo, but you can take it too far.
How do you even know these girls? I asked. Didn't you just move to town?
They picked me up when I was walking here.
You walked here? The A-frame wasn't in the country, but neither was it in the town center. Why?
I walk everywhere.
He lifted one foot, then the other.
Just me, Pete, and repeat.
By choice?
By order of the state of California, he replied. I'm currently between licenses.
I was pretty sure that wasn't even a thing. Is this about wrecking your mom's car?
Partially. So, are you not social by choice or due to your personality?
Again, I was struck by how he could turn the subject from himself to me as easily as flicking a wrist. What do you mean, my personality? He shrugged.
You are a bit prickly.
I am not prickly, I said, sounding exactly that way. I took a breath, resetting. It's been a hard year. Dating hasn't exactly been a priority. He shuddered.
God, who wants to date? Not you, apparently.
I like the process, not the endgame. Courtship is my thing.
I just looked at him.
Did you really just say courtship was your thing? Prickly and hard of hearing, are we?
I made a face, which he returned before saying, There's a reason they call it the thrill of the chase.
So you don't do commitment? Why would I? That's what they do with crazy people, he said.
I sighed. Look, it's not like I'm tricking anyone. I am clear in the fact that my intention is to have, well, no intentions.
Did you not just promise a dance, a shot, and a bag of chips?
That's not a relationship. It's a list. There's a difference.
The door slid open again. I was expecting yet another girl in a boa, but it was Jilly who stuck her head out, scanning the deck one way, then the other. When she saw me, she exhaled and hurried over.
I have been so worried!
She'd taken off her shoes, which were actually a pair of mine, at some point.
What happened to you? 1 minute we were having fun dancing, and then you were gone.
I got lightheaded, I said.
And groped, Ambrose added. Jughead and his big ears were all over her. You finally get a chance to make her social, and that's the route you choose?
It said something about how concerned Jilly was that, up to this point, she hadn't paid much attention to Ambrose. Usually, she didn't miss anything, especially a male anything. Now she'd spotted him, and she was pissed.
Who the hell are you?
Ambrose Little,
he said, sticking out his hand.
I work with Luna.
No, you don't.
How do you figure?
Because she's my best friend, and I know everything about her, including whom she works with.
I've never seen you in my life. Well, don't you think a lot of yourself? You don't know someone, so they don't exist?
She just looked at him, not used to being off her game in this way. Then, prioritizing, she waved him off, turning back to me. I had no idea Eric was getting handsy. I'm sorry, it was crazy out there. Man, I'd been way off on the name. Not that I felt bad about it at this point.
It's okay, it's just been a long day, and I know.
She looked at Ambrose. Who is this guy?
Ambrose Little. I work with Luna.
No, she said firmly.
You don't.
Actually, I began. Now she looked confused. Since this afternoon, he kind of does. His sister is a client. He was dancing nearby when Eric was getting grabby, and he
performed a conga extraction,
Ambrose finished for me.
Just one of my many specialties.
Jilly gave him a level gaze, contemplating his face. Finally, she said, I don't think I like you.
A common reaction, he replied. I'll win you over, eventually.
She looked at me, flabbergasted. All I could say was, I know. The door slid open again. This time, all I could see was an arm, a boa wrapped around it. Was it Grace? Bag of chips? Another girl? I hated that I was actually curious.
Ambrose! Where are you?
I guess that's my cue.
He sat up, brushing his hands off. Then to me, he said,
You okay? All better now?
If only, I thought. Was there even such a thing? I could feel Jilly watching me, aware of this moment, or whatever it was, between his question and my answer. I'm fine, I said. Thanks again.
No problem.
He stood up, running a hand through his hair, then did a little bow to Jilly.
Lovely making your acquaintance.
You too, she replied, obviously guarded.
See? You're coming around.
He grinned, then turned on one foot, slid his hands in his pockets, and started to the door, where all the boas were now gathered. A wall of girl waiting for him. He raised his arms, giving a fanfare as they all hooted, then reached to pull him in. Jilly looked pensive as she took a seat on my other side.
Is it weird that I am strangely attracted to him, even as I dislike him totally?
Yes, I said flatly.
I figured. He's not really my type, anyway, she decided. Too good-looking, and he knows it. Not to mention he just screams of asshole. You think? I asked. Don't you?
If she'd posed this question earlier that day, or even at the wedding where we'd first met, my answer certainly would have been yes. Ambrose was cocky, entirely too confident in his own charm. He had little or no regard for other people's time or feelings, and was about as shallow in his intentions as anyone I'd ever met. And now he was most likely working each one of those boa girls against the others, adding to his list.
And yet, I couldn't deny what had happened on the dance floor earlier. It wasn't how Ambrose appeared when, in my panic, everything had gone wavery, that whooshing about to begin in my ears that would take me down. Nor was it the way he'd sat with me afterward, peppering the night with his prattle as I tried to fill my lungs with air. Instead, it was a beat in between, something small, when he took my hand and began to pull me out of the crowd, and I felt myself, my prickly, antisocial self, squeeze his fingers once, tightly. He squeezed back, like a question and then an answer or call and response, without either of us saying a word. I stayed at the party for another hour or so, for Jilly more than myself. I had pledged to make memories. I wanted to at least try to have them be good ones. So we danced, just the two of us, and toasted our futures with beer from a fresh keg when it arrived. I didn't see Ambrose again, although I had to admit I did look for him every time I saw a flash of pink feathers in my peripheral vision. At 3:30 a.m., we piled into a rideshare with some guys Jilly knew and headed home, with all the windows down, the night pouring in. I was dropped off second, and my house was dark. Once inside, I could see William asleep on the couch, where he often crashed when he and my mom stayed up talking late. His shoes were off, arms folded over his chest. He literally slept like a dead person. I picked the Afghan off a nearby chair, shaking it out, then covered him. He didn't budge. I knew I should be tired, too, as I'd been up close to 24 hours straight. But even under the covers in my cool room with the fan on, I wasn't able to sleep. Finally, I picked up my phone from where it was charging on the nightstand and opened up one of my news apps. The story was right at the top, as I knew it would be. The featured picture, that of a brick building, ambulances lined up beside it. I scrolled down past the bullet points of the story, then the introduction, looking for the only words that mattered to me. Elizabeth Hawkins, 17. Demetrius Barclay, 16. Sierra Copeland, 17. Marcus Sheffield, 15. Willa Martin, 16. In the coming days, there would be pictures, remembrances, funerals. But tonight, there were just these names, no faces yet to match, the barest of bare facts. That was the way it was when it wasn't personal, when your own heart didn't lurch at the sight of that particular combination of letters, when they were just other people's children, brothers, sisters, loved ones. Ethan Caruso, 17. 7 months earlier was different. He had been mine. Chapter 6. The sand was chilly on my feet as I stepped onto it that August night. With the music still audible from the patio, I hooked the straps of my shoes onto my thumb, then slid my phone into the pocket of my dress. Ahead, the beach was flat and dark, dotted with the lights from hotels and, farther along, houses. Thinking I'd only go a little way before I turned around, I started walking. If he hadn't been wearing that white shirt, bright almost to the point of glowing, I might not have even seen him. But he was. The boy who had asked me to dance, standing by the water's edge. I couldn't miss him. No, more than that. I can never picture him in anything else. The real surprise, though, was that he saw me. When you come across someone on the beach at night, contemplating the ocean, you don't exactly interrupt. It's one of those unwritten rules. So I'd just walked behind him, keeping my head down, when I heard him say, "All done for the night?" It's funny, the little details you remember from the things you cannot forget. The sand cool on my feet. The weight of my shoes shifting as they swung in my hand. And again, that shirt bright in contrast to my own black dress, so dark I wondered later how he'd even seen me at all. "Yeah," I answered. "I got off early for once." "Is it early?" He looked back behind him, over the dunes, where the party was still going on, shadows of figures distantly visible moving above. "Man, it feels late to me." I wasn't sure what to say to this and felt like maybe I should keep moving, give him the space he'd clearly come out here to claim. But he was the one who had started talking. "Weddings take a lot out of you," I answered, "or so I hear."
"You hear? You should know. You go to tons, right?"
"I work at tons," I corrected him. "It's different from being a guest. You're at a distance, an observer, almost scientific."
"Huh,"
he said. He had a bit of a northern accent, enough to notice.
"I never thought about it that way. Then again, I mow yards for my job."
"That's not emotional?"
"Maybe for the grass."
I laughed. "I never thought about it that way."
"Oh, the world of landscaping is fascinating. Except that it's totally not."
We stood there for a second, both of us facing the crashing waves. Out on the horizon, I could see a fishing boat, its lights twinkling as the water shifted. From behind us, there was a loud whoop, followed by cheering, and we both turned to look. In profile, I saw he had long lashes, a jut I hadn't noticed to his chin. "Your family's having fun," I said.
"My dad's family,"
he corrected me immediately. "Okay," I thought. He gave me an apologetic smile.
"Sorry, it's just complicated."
"Family usually is," I said.
"Is yours?"
I considered this for a moment. "Not really." He laughed.
"Oh, I get it. You are still on the clock. Counseling morose guests gone AWOL from the ceremony, just part of the job."
"No, no," I protested, holding up my hand. "I just mean, my family is only me and my mom, well, and William, not much to complicate."
"William?"
"Her best friend, my godfather, basically my father, except he's not," I explained, using the term I'd come up with back in elementary school during Meet My Family Week, when this issue first arose. "My real dad died when I was 3.
"Wow. Sorry."
I shrugged. I didn't really know him, at least that I remember, so it's not like I miss him or anything. He slid his hands in his pockets, leaning back on his heels.
"My dad and I used to be super close. I was his little buddy, all that. Then, 3 years ago, he ditched my mom for his secretary. Such a stereotype. He couldn't even be original about cheating."
His voice was tinged with disgust, saying this. Now I said, "I'm sorry."
A shrug. "Not your fault. And yet you managed to apologize anyway. He never has. Weird how that works, huh?"
Definitely, I said. How's your mom doing?
She's fine, he replied. Remarried too, by this point. She's over it.
And you? Silence. Then,
not quite there yet. Even though I did agree to take this road trip with him to this wedding and be a groomsman. It was supposed to be this big rebonding experience.
I dug a toe into the wet sand, wiggling it until it disappeared. And how's that going?
I'm out here, alone, in the dark. Or at least I was until you came along,
he replied. You tell me.
Ethan!
The voice was behind us, coming from the steps that led up to the hotel. When I turned, I saw a heavy-set woman in a green metallic dress, her hair done in an updo, peering down at us. The boy beside me said,
Yeah?
You're missing everything, she called out. Joe and Margie will be leaving soon.
Okay, he replied. Just a sec.
Placated, she turned, adjusting her hair, then started back toward the party, her shadow stretching long down the stairs behind her. Ethan turned back to the water, a tired look on his face.
My Aunt Dee Dee,
who has kind of taken my estrangement from my dad personally.
Family is complicated, I said.
Exactly. Unless you're...
He raised his eyebrows at me.
What's your name?
Luna, I said.
Like the moon?
Like Lewis and Natalie, young vegans in love, circa 1999. Now I made a face.
Wow, he said, looking impressed. I think this is a story I have to hear.
I looked back at the steps, where Aunt Dee Dee was now just a green blur in the distance. Too bad you have to go back.
Yeah,
he glanced over as well.
Too bad.
We stood there for a second, facing each other. His shirt tails, now untucked, were ruffling in the wind. I'd never had this feeling before, that something big was about to happen, and there was nothing I had to do but wait for it. A beat, then another. Finally, Ethan stepped back from me, away from the throne brightness of the hotel and into the dimness of the beach beyond. The wind blew my hair, the straps of my shoes twisting around each other as he smiled at me, then gestured for me to join him there. I didn't even hesitate. So much of life is not being sure of anything. How I wished later I'd been able to savor them, those few steps and moments when, for once, I just knew. We walked for what felt like a long time, just talking. First about my mom and dad and their marriage in the woods with the chickens, and then how his parents imploded in the midst of a huge home renovation that was never completed.
She wanted an exercise and yoga room, and he wanted a wine cellar. They ended up with a divorce. Nice, right?
His cynicism, at least about this subject, was a comfort to me, and made it easy for me to tell him about my mother and William's views on love and marriage and how, unfortunately or not, they'd been passed on to me.
I don't not believe in love,
he told me as we passed the last of the hotels and began to see houses up on the dunes.
I'm just not sure about marriage as an institution.
Maybe you'll be the more barefoot, chicken-keeping, lifetime partner but no ring kind of person, I suggested.
Because that's what happens to guys like me from New Jersey who play lacrosse and mow lawns.
Maybe it is. He laughed again, throwing his head back. You had to love, or okay, maybe just like, a person who could revel in the humor of something so fully. It made me want to laugh, too. I can get behind the idea of a good marriage, I said as we stepped around some abandoned beach chairs. Like my best friend Jilly, her parents. They run a food truck company, have 5 kids between 2 and 17, and their lives are total chaos. But they can't keep their hands off each other. I've never seen two people more in love. Ethan looked up at the sky.
When it works, I guess.
That's entirely too vague for me. I need to know how it works, I said, preferably with diagrams and bullet points. I want a guarantee.
Wow, that's a big ask, he said.
It is, I told him. But some people get it, right? That surety, that something, someone really is forever. My mom wouldn't have a business otherwise.
I don't think anybody ever really knows what's going to happen, he said. We're all just out here, hoping for the best.
I thought of all the weddings I'd worked, from the small church ones with finger food to the huge, multi-venue kind where no expense was spared. How sure were any of them, really, even after checking every box, aisle walk, vows, rings, first dance, toasts, and cake? Like going through these motions, or variations of such, were the way of guaranteeing something would last. But I, of all people, knew this just wasn't true. We loved a third wedding, after all. A few minutes later, I saw a bonfire burning ahead, a few dark figures standing around it. We went wide around them, but could still hear their voices, as well as music coming from a truck, doors open, parked in the sand by the dunes. Once past, I was surprised to see the beach ahead of us narrow to a thin strip, the tide running over a few sandbars there. In the dark, I'd just assumed it went on for miles. We kept going, all the way to the edge.
"Well, here we are," Ethan said. "The end of the world."
I smiled, turning slightly to take in the full view. "It's different than I expected."
"The big stuff always is," he said.
Behind us, I heard a swell of music, something easy and slow. It had to be deafening by the bonfire. Where we were, though, it was caught in the wind and carried, just distant enough to seem ghost-like. Or maybe that was the wrong word. Perhaps I wouldn't have used it at that moment, but only now. Ethan walked out a little farther into the sand and water, the wind catching that white shirt, again sending the back billowing behind him. It was like he was glowing, more alive than anything I'd ever seen, when he turned back to me, holding out his hand.
"Okay, I'll only ask once more, I promise. Want to dance?"
Could I hear the music still? In my memory, the answer is yes. But in retrospect, everything is perfect, as are all the other details of this night. At that moment, though, everything was brand new, including the way I felt as I stepped forward, locking my fingers into his as he pulled me in closer. Me and Ethan, dancing in the dark at the end of the world. It was like I'd waited all my life to have something like this, and I knew even then, at the start, that it would be hard, so hard, to lose. The big stuff always is. Chapter 7.
I'm here!
He wasn't. In fact, he was barely through the door, racing toward the conference table, where the rest of us had been sitting for a good 7 minutes. I turned to my mother, who valued promptness above all else, but she wouldn't look at me. Nobody likes an "I told you so."
"Sorry," Ambrose said as he basically threw himself, panting, into the seat beside me.
A chair on wheels, it began rolling, putting him in motion as he added,
"There was an accident on Main Street."
William, across the table, followed this movement with his eyes, intrigued. "He always loved a shit show," I said.
"Didn't you walk here, though?"
"Yes," Ambrose replied, putting out a hand, finally, to stop himself. Then he grabbed the side of the table and began trying to return the chair into position, one clumsy pull at a time.
"But I had to stop and—"
"Yank."
"Rubberneck. I'm only—"
"Yank."
"Human,"
I seriously thought my mom would just go ahead and fire him that second. He was late, clearly inept, and still yanking. Instead, she said, "Was everyone okay?"
"Looked like it. Airbag deployed, though, and there was an ambulance."
Finally, back where he'd begun at the table, he settled into his chair, then pulled a hand through his mussed-up hair. That one curl tumbled, and a piece of pink boa, stringy and wavering, rose up above him. No one else seemed to notice.
"I could have garnered more detail, but it was important to me that I be on time."
I rolled my eyes. "You weren't, though."
"Well, we're all here now, so let's get started,"
my mother said. "Ambrose, first thing each morning, we go over that day's schedule. You'll find it on that wall. Luna, give him a pad for notes, would you?" After the tape dispenser incident, I had my reservations about trusting him with any office supplies. But I did as I was told, reaching across the table to pick up one of the yellow legal pads stacked there, along with a black pen from the nearby cup. When I pushed it over to Ambrose, he looked delighted, centering it in front of him and uncapping the pen. I watched as he wrote his name at the top, like he was about to take a spelling test in third grade, followed by a number one with a dot. "All of our upcoming events and tasks will be listed here," my mom said, gesturing to the whiteboard behind her, which was divided into two sections. On one side was a calendar of that month, with all of our events represented in William's block print. The other was the current week, with more detailed listings of every meeting, task, and errand that needed completing. I was grateful to see Kirby's listed right at the top of that day, Friday, which meant a 2-hour car ride by myself, nursing what I was pretty sure was my first hangover. 1. "Whiteboard is schedule," Ambrose wrote. The pen was squeaking. "As you can see," my mom continued, "our next event is the Charlotte McDonald wedding. We'll be overseeing the rehearsal dinner tonight at the Lakeview Armory. Tomorrow we'll have what we call a double hander, which means a church ceremony followed by a reception at another location." 2. "Two hands this weekend," Ambrose added to his list. "You'll see the locations are abbreviated next to the schedule," William said. "VB and BH, Village Baptist and Barn Hill." 3. "Codes are involved." Why was I reading this? I made a point of looking away. "As you can see," my mom was saying, "William and I have 3 meetings today, and there is a lot to be done out of the office, most importantly, the pickup of flowers. I'll expect you and Luna to get that done first and follow up with the rest of the errands."
"Wait, what?"
I said. "We don't both have to go to Kirby's. That's a one-person job." "It's Ambrose's first day. He's shadowing you, learning the ropes." The pen squeaked again. I couldn't help myself. I looked. 4. "I'm a shadow."
"I don't need help,"
I pointed to the board. "Look, it says right there that programs need to be folded and place cards organized. That's all inside work you guys can oversee from your meetings." "I think it's better if he goes along for the flowers," she said. "You can't be sure when you'll need an extra hand."
"Never," I said. "That's when. I never have. Ever."
William, fingers tented beneath his chin, looked amused. Ambrose said,
"You guys, Luna's not my number one fan, although I thought that might have changed after last night."
William raised his eyebrows. I heard my mom's chair creak as she turned to look at me, saying, "Last night?"
"Well, this sounds interesting," William said.
"It's not," I assured him, "and it has nothing to do with work, which is what I thought we were supposed to be talking about."
"This girl, she's all business," Ambrose said. "That's what I love about her. Short version is, I saved her from a jug-headed groper."
"A grouper?" William asked. "Like the fish?"
"Groper, as in one who gropes. Was groping. Has groped."
Ambrose clicked his pen open, then shut, punctuating this conjugation.
It was on the dance floor, at this party.
You were dancing? William asked. From his expression, you would have thought